todo el mundo.
But this was really
1981.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Lane Wilson, author of the Rock and Roll Nightmares book series and director of the documentary The Ventures, Stars on Guitars. This is your destination for all things rock, where the interviewees include musicians, authors, historians, filmmakers, and more. And now, on to the show. My guest today is Angie Moon, the founder of The Diversity of Classic Rock, which can be found at crazyonclassicrock.com. She's also a music historian and the author of a new nonfiction true crime book called Crime of the Century. Let's get Angie on the line to find out about all that and more. Welcome to the show, Angie. It's great to have you here today.
Likewise, I'm very happy to be here.
First of all, I have to ask, any relation to Keith Moon?
No, my real name is just sounds more like a lawyer name. And I wanted a very British rock and roll image. And I was really into The Who as a teenager, still am. And I was like, okay, what classic rock, like last name, like of The Who, like which last name sounds the best? And I was like, okay, Angie Moon sounds the best of all of the bunch. So that's
Absolutely.
Why I chose last name Moon.
And you got the Angie Bowie connection too, right?
Yeah, so like my first name, Angie, is a Rolling Stone song as well. And
then
my cat's name is Bowie. And my middle name's Michelle, which is a Beatles song. So I got like the big three British invasion groups in my name.
Crime of the Century is your debut book, which I believe came out last year. But
yes.
I understand you've been honing your craft as a writer for quite some time. So can you share your journey as a writer and what led you to this point?
So I originally didn't want to be a writer. I was the type of person to fall asleep in English class. And when I was in university, I had a radio show and I had a classic rock show, of course. And while I was doing radio, I was at this freeform station and it was like, they were just so restrictive. It was like freeform, but they were very restrictive and they made me play like a much wider variety of songs than I really initially wanted to play. I was just playing stuff from like the 60s, 70s, sometimes 80s. And they were telling me, the music you're playing is not diverse at all. And I was like, no, classic rock is so much more diverse than that. They were just telling me it was all a bunch of old white guys. And I was like, I'm going to prove that classic rock is more than that. So that's how the diversity of classic rock came about. I sat on the idea for about a year and then when I was studying abroad in Ireland, that's where I met my husband, and I was taking a class called Intro to Social Media, and they were asking me to create a blog as part of one of the assignments, and I decided, why not do the diversity of classic rock? And it was just originally a school project, but I liked writing so much that I continued doing that. And I continued doing radio too while I was in university, but I haven't done radio since I've graduated.
Your book takes a pretty unique approach by opening with stories of rock musicians who narrowly escaped encounters with murderers, like the Hawks with Jack Ruby, Debbie Harry with Ted Bundy. What discovery during your research surprised you the most in this particular category, which opens the book up?
Ooh, I would have to say, like, the one that really was like the catalyst for me writing this book was the kinks, really. The idea for this book actually was something that like I had it in my back pocket when I've been into true crime since I was 8 years old, 9 years old. And I was doing a radio show with my friend in Ireland. His name was Killian. He's sadly no longer with us. And he invited me on a show. And we were just doing a talk show. And then during one of the breaks, he decided to play a song. It was a nice sounding 60s folk song. And he asked me my opinion on it. And I said, "Oh, it sounds like a very nice song." And then he told me, "It's by Charles Manson." And I was like, "Wait, what?" Like, I knew who Charles Manson was. I knew what he did, but I didn't know that he made music. And I didn't know about his Beach Boys connection until then. And then I find out about the Kinks, another sibling group, and I was getting into their music right around like the start of the pandemic. I've always liked their music ever since I got into classic rock as a teenager, but I just really dove deep into their discography in like 2020. And then I found out not only did they have one true crime connection, they had two. So it was John Wayne Gacy in Illinois while they were on tour in the US, and that was their notorious 1965 tour that got them banned from the United States. And they're the only rock band to have really been banned from touring the US. Although the Rolling Stones were banned, but it wasn't because of anything with the musicians' union, it was because of drug charges, but that's another story. And then the other connection was the Kray Twins, and that was in their native London. And that was something that I noticed was missing in a lot of classic rock related books is that they're so Americano-centric, and I wanted to include stories from other countries. And that's why I included quite a few British stories. The other thing that just blew my mind, and you'll see it referenced on the cover, so it's like a tarot card. And the whole tarot card is a reference to Joe Meek. And Joe Meek, in January 1958, he went to a tarot card reading with a friend. This fortune teller friend drew out three tarot cards and then wrote down whatever came to mind. So he wrote on one of them, Buddy Holly, next one, dies, next one, February 3rd. This is January 1958. February 3rd, 1958 comes and goes. Buddy Holly's touring the UK, March 1958. He comes to London and Joe Meek decides to go to the concert to warn him about February 3rd. February 3rd, 1959, the day the music died. Now, February 3rd, that's the birthday of Dave Davis, who popularized the Flying V. And he got that Flying V during that first US tour in 1965 when he lost a Gretsch guitar that had belonged to George Harrison. So, February 3rd, 1967, Joe Meek kills his landlady before turning the gun on himself. His American counterpart, Phil Spector, killed Lana Clarkson February 3rd, 2003. Truly a day the music died.
Wow, yeah, that is crazy. Now, given that many of these cases occurred decades ago, what was your approach to researching and verifying the information for your book?
So I've cited more sources in this book than in my husband's PhD thesis. The book is longer than my husband's PhD thesis, 100,000 words in total. And really was just reading a lot of books, a lot of blogs, watching a lot of documentaries, and then just cross-referencing and just double-checking a lot of things. I have an academic background because I have a master's in journalism. So yeah, that wasn't alien to me at all. And I just love doing research rabbit holes. Like, I think the craziest one obviously has to be JFK. Like, that was insane just reading so much about the JFK assassination.
Oh, yeah, there's just so much behind it and so many different theories. And there's still a mystery to this day, despite the fact that the files, many of which have been redacted, were just released again, I think this year. So it's a never ending source of fascination for people. And yeah, I love that story about the Hawks and Jack Ruby in your book. That was really fun and thought provoking.
Oh yeah, it was just crazy. You never know who would, you're going to meet and like what crazy things they could be doing. And that's like the thing that fascinates me most about true crime is that the most dangerous people are not the people that you would suspect. They're often like the most ordinary looking people, sometimes the most charming people, and that's what makes it even more insidious. And really what got me into true crime was just the psychology of it all. And my dad used to be a police officer, as I mentioned in the intro of the book, and that's something that we would discuss so much when watching true crime documentaries every weekend.
I wanted to ask you too about listening to the music and delving into all this research. So many of the musicians featured in your book were involved in really troubling incidents. Has your research or your newfound knowledge affected your ability to appreciate their music? Can you separate the art from the artist? Is there
anyone that you can no longer listen to after writing Crime of the Century?
No, like when I think about it, there's certain musicians definitely in the second section that I don't listen to at all. I don't listen to the Sex Pistols. I don't really listen to Spade Cooley. Lil Willie John, I definitely listen to. I like his music a lot. Let's go through the year. Joe Meek, I still love his productions. Phil Spector, I mean, he just produced the songs. He wasn't really performing on them. So Jim Gordon, he's a session musician, so it's very hard to avoid him because he was like, you
That's
know,
true,
the Clem
it
Catania
is.
of America or the Bobby Graham of America. And yeah, like Keith Moon and Les McEwen, those were both accidents. Marcus Malone, he wasn't really involved too much in Santana. He was just very close to making it. And then Rick Stevens of Tower of Power, I do Tower of Power still.
I noticed in your social media posts that you're a bass player yourself. Are there any crime-related stories involving bassists that particularly resonate with you?
Ooh. I don't know actually of any like particular ones. Like that's Sid Vicious actually. Like if you can call him a bass player, if you can call him one, I'd say my bass skills are probably on par with his. If I'm being generous, I'm not very good. Never took any lessons, just like goofing around and playing bits of bass lines, really. But yeah, Sid Vicious is definitely the one that comes to mind.
Your bass is an absolute beauty. What kind is it?
It's a Squire. Yes, it's a Squire. It's like one of the higher end Squire models. I think it's just like one step below the Fenders. I got it at a bass show in Solihull, so that's near Birmingham, England.
It's amazing. It's beautiful. Who are some of your favorite bassists? Are
Oh,
there
definitely
songs?
John Entwistle, Chris Squire, Geddy Lee. Yeah, definitely those guys. James Jamerson, very good too.
Yeah, there's something about the bass lines, especially in the 1970s songs, that are so outstanding. I feel like that's gone away these days. So it was the
Yeah.
golden era, yeah, back then.
Definitely like I'd even argue like as much as I love rock and roll, I think some of the best bass playing you can hear is in disco and R&B and soul, definitely.
So what do you think it is about the classic rock era, especially the 1970s, that continues to captivate audiences of all ages today?
I think like for all the like the great years of classic rock, like even the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, I think it's just the glamour, the jet setting. I think people are just fascinated with celebrities because it is a form of escapism. The art that they create is a form of escapism from a humdrum life. I think about when the Northern Soul scene or like in working class communities in England, how these people would be working at their factory jobs or shop jobs or any job really. And they would prioritize listening to rock and roll and going to clubs and seeing bands, and they just had so much passion for the music. And I think that's just such an incredible thing. I think it was one of the very few times, it was such a short period of time where people who were working class could make it in music. And there was that social mobility. And it's sad to see that's gone, that we don't have as many grants for creatives anymore. It's all just like that meme of don't ask why that indie musician's parents' names are in blue on Wikipedia.
That's true. And also now, so many people get into music as influencers, so they never really had to pay their dues, so to speak, and play in those small, ratty clubs and really come up through the ranks.
Yeah, like it's so hard, and I respect people so much who balance like having a job and their creative pursuits. That's something that I'm struggling with right now because I got a full-time job recently and my writing had to take a bit of a back seat. Occasionally, I do book reviews and things like that. And I've reviewed some pretty good books, like ones about Pink Floyd and David Bowie and Queen recently. And now I got a Buddy Holly book I got to review, which that's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely.
And then I'm currently working on my next book, which is about celebrity trials, the first 100 years of them.
Oh, wow. I definitely want to check that one out. For now, where can listeners find your book, Crime of the Century, and connect with you online?
All right, so my website is crazyonclassicrock.com, and you can buy my book through my website, and I get the full price that you pay, and I can sign it. My cat can even sign it. So if you want a book signed by
Really?
Bowie, yeah, that was my friend's idea. He wanted a book that was signed by Bowie so he can just brag about, oh yeah, I have a book, classic rock book signed by Bowie, and it's just my cat. I was like, awesome. So I've done that for some family and friends, and they love that. She's even signed my own personal hardback copy that I have right here. I can even personalize it. I write like a poem in there practically.
Oh, how
Like I write a
fun.
lot whenever not a poem, but I write an extensive amount, like a big thank you, like every time I meet people who at events who want to buy my books. So I really get a lot of joy out of it. It's just such an honor whenever people decide to pick my book up. But yeah, on my website, on the Buy Crime of the Century page, I have a list of stockists on there. So yeah, if you want to purchase it through Amazon or anywhere else, you absolutely can. There's also bookshop.org, which helps support local bookstores, which is really cool.
Yeah, I love that. And social media.
So my social media pages. So Instagram is Angie Michelle Moon. Facebook is Angie Moon Classic Rock. And I'm also on Blue Sky as just Angie Moon. So I got on there early, so I got my name on there. So that's really
Oh,
awesome.
brilliant. Thank you so much, Angie. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your writing journey with us, and I look forward to your next book. Congratulations on all your success.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to writing the next one. It's taking a long time, definitely, to research it because it's going to be more than just classic rockers, although there are going to be definitely some classic rockers in that one, like Jim Morrison, the Rolling Stones, Jimi Hendrix, Pete Seeger as well. But yeah, we're going to be talking about like authors, actors, athletes, musicians. Yeah, it's going to be just such a wide range, and it's going to be just a big challenge for me, but I'm really looking forward to writing more. I'm just still on the first chapter, but I want to make sure I get that right because I use like the first chapter I write as like my blueprint for the rest of what I'm doing.
Yeah, I love how you did that with Crime of the Century, and you talked about how Supertramp inspired the title.
Yeah.
Very good stuff. Thank you, Angie.
Thank you.
This concludes another episode of the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. Remember, there's a book series too. All the books are available in paperback, ebook, and audio via Amazon or the Rock and Roll Nightmares website. That's ROCK-N-ROLL-Nightmares.com. Our official theme song is She's Out for Blood by Fuzzbuster, founded by Lars Cabot. Thank you for listening. Well, she's by.